to raise questions for their participation from the virtual end here. Ms. Mananiso in the virtual. Tseke, Sukas, Gonde, Sagude, I'll respond to that. Skosana, Mylam, Gola, Gola, Manili. No one else in the chat. Begizwe Ngosi. Okay, and Lape. Thank you. In that order. Honorable Mananiso.
Okay, thank you, Chair, and good day to the members on the House and as well in on the visual. Let me welcome Mr. Gumbe Tshelela. Good day, sir.
Good day.
My first question to you is, did the PP give reasons for rejecting your advice and that of the attorneys regarding to award to Ms. Mosasa?
To Ms. Mosana.
Yes.
No.
Okay. You are saying no. So you didn't have reasons from the APPs.
No.
Okay. And then, sir, my second question to you is with regards to what you said on your affidavit, paragraph 56, last line, where you speak about the PP discretionary powers. Did she uphold to these powers, according to you?
Paragraph 56.
The last line that speaks about the PP's discretionary powers. I just want to check with you if, according to you, with your experience working with her, did she uphold to those powers?
Okay, paragraph 56 is the one that talks about the first sentence says the first short-term contract was extended to 1st August 2018. Are you there?
Yes, I'm there. I just want to know if, according to your experience working with her, did the PP actually uphold to her powers? Yes or no?
In relation to what?
In relation to executing her powers as the PP.
I don't understand the question. Probably let me read this paragraph and then put it into context.
Okay, sir.
Okay. The first short-term contract was extended from 1st August 2018 to the 1st July 2019. This was for a longer period in order to ensure continuity in the organization. I was instructed by PP to prepare a further fixed term ending 30 April 2023, whilst it remains subject to Mr. Mahlangu obtaining top secret clearance, secured clearance, a failure of which would result in an automatic termination of the contract. Further, that should the Labour Court confirm Mr. Mahlangu's dismissal, the contract would terminate on the date of the court order, unless, okay. My view that is on this one, is that of the panel, that we should not have appointed Mahlangu while these two matters were still hanging.
Okay, so you don't have the answer if, according to you, with your experience with the PP, did the PP hold on to the issues of her powers? You don't have the answer with regards to that. Because my question is with regards to the discretionary powers vested with the PP.
Maybe just a pause, Advocate Bauer.
I just want to add a point of clarification. I think the discretion comes in the last part where it says consideration where the PP decided otherwise after studying the judgment. We just need to clarify it that there's never been a judgment. Those Labour Court proceedings were never completed, or hasn't to date been completed based on the evidence we got. So I think that there's a bit of disjuncture between the question and what the witness is understanding it.
Okay. You follow that, Honorable Manani and Mr. Kialela?
I did follow that, hence I'm asking about the experience of Mr. Kialela working with the PP. If according to him, did the PP uphold to these discretionary powers? So if the question is not relevant or it's not understood, we can pass to another question.
Okay, proceed, Honorable Manani.
Okay, and then my other question, it's on paragraph 64, actually, on your affidavit. Do you think the PP handled the differences with Mr. Mosana in a negligent manner or in a correct manner?
Well, that will be difficult to answer because I don't know what had happened before. That is before, for instance, if that was the first instance, I would say it could have been handled. The matter could have been handled. That is better. By better, I mean it could not have resulted in PP saying that he can no longer work with her. My difficulty is that I don't know if that was the first instance of this happening between them, or it was the 10th instance. So if it was the first instance, then she would have handled it differently. But if it was the 5th, 6th, 7th, 10th instance, then I would understand.
Okay, thank you, Chair. My last question to you, sir, is how would you explain the inconsistency with the manner in which the PP dealt with employees who did not have the security clearance, particularly as it relates to Mr. Kaposa and Mr. Mahlangu? Why did PP treat Mr. Kaposa differently than Mr. Mahlangu, as both did not have top security clearance? And thank you, Chair. That's my last question.
I don't have an answer to that, Chair.
You can't answer that?
No.
You don't have an answer to that. Is that what he's saying?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Honorable Tseke.
Thank you very much, Chair. Good afternoon, Mr. Chelele.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chelele.
What was the role of Mr. Sibusiso Nyembe before he was appointed as the chief of staff?
He was the special advisor to the public protector.
I'm raising this question because Mr. Tebogo Kekana, when he gave evidence to this committee, he said that Mr. Sibusiso was introduced actually as a political advisor by the PP in one of their meetings with the legal advisor. So I raised it in that context. Was he not a political advisor to the PP?
I was not part of that meeting. What I know is that he was a special advisor. So I don't know in which particular areas he was advising PP. I just know that he was a special advisor.
When was he appointed as the special advisor? Just to confirm on record.
Let me just confirm in my affidavit. Okay, that was from 1st April 2018 to 30 June 2018. It was a 3 month period.
Oh, meaning and he left because his fixed term contract expired. Was his fixed term 3 months?
That's correct, yes, as a special advisor.
Oh, okay, let's move out of that. In paragraph 55, you indicate that there was a criminal charge pending against Mr. Mahlangu. What was he charged with at that time, and was the PP aware of this?
Yes, he declared it in the interview. It was driving under the influence. But later on, it was cleared. He brought something from the, I don't know whether it's from court or from police, clearing it.
So you appointed him with that record, criminal case?
That's correct, yes.
And what was the view of the PP with that?
Well, he just declared it in the interview. There was no discussion about it.
Okay. My next question, in paragraph 109, you indicated that the PP was not happy with the outcome of the DC disciplinary hearings against Ms. Mokgaladi and Ms. Sekele. Would you say that the PP pursued disciplinary charges against the employees with a predetermined outcome in mind, notwithstanding the recommendation by the panel that conducted the hearing?
Well, it's clear from the letter that she wrote to employees after receiving the outcome, because she said they should explain why they should not be dismissed. That implies that she wanted them to be dismissed because she believes that the charges were the sanction was not appropriate with regard to the charges.
Thanks very much, Mr. Jelle. My last question, Chair. When the PP sought the assistance of the Commission on Gender Equality instead of accepting the report of the external law firm, do you think she may have wanted a particular outcome from the investigation?
Not necessarily. She sought that advice from CGE because the employee appealed to her, so she had to do something about the appeal.
Thanks very much, Chair. Thanks very much, Mr. Jelle.
Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Tseke. Honorable Sukes.
Chair.
Before Honorable Sukes, I see the head of Advocate Mbof.
Yes, Chair, sorry, I wanted to come in between members. It's just a point of information maybe for the committee that when somebody is charged with something that doesn't amount to a record. The record only comes when you are convicted. But just so that we don't lose that point here.
Thank you, Advocate Mpofu. Let's just agree on this so that we don't do this with so much regularity. Well, I would like to have the members having this space with themselves. Thank you for the information. But I want us to tone down on the regularity of that. Thank you.
But Chair, then you should have done so when Advocate Bauer was assisting with clarifying. You can't.
No, I'm not going to go to where you want me to go. I'm just making this point. Thank you. Honorable Sukas.
Thank you, Chair. I'm a bit, my papers are a bit all over the place, but I'm going to try and stick into the time. Good afternoon, Mr. Chilela, and thank you for coming before this committee. I have a few questions that I would like to pose to you. I actually have a few. One centers around the affidavit of Mr. Samuel and the other around the HR strategic function as it pertains to the Public Protector's Office. I should say to you that I come from an executive search and change management background, and so the issues of HR specifically is very important to me, and I have a certain bias where that is concerned, and issues of fairness as well is very important. So I have a very particular bias, and taking my and perhaps your bias in mind, I would you agree that in the Public Protector's Office, you are only working through people? You don't have machinery, production lines. You are working with people, and people are your main asset for the organization. So would you agree that HR is a critical strategic function in order for you to execute on your strategic mandate?
Yes, I fully agree with that, Honorable Sukas.
And with that, bearing that in mind, I'm going to ask you a few questions that is related to that. And I'm going to refer to Mr. Samuel's affidavit. And I must apologize to you because I'm a bit disorganized with my papers, and I apologize for that if there's a little bit of a delay. He writes in his affidavit in paragraph 91, he says, I was a member of the Public Servants Association, which was the only union among OPP staff and representative of the majority of staff members. In the feedback sessions from PSA shop stewards, it was clearly communicated to us that OPP employees were unhappy with the working environment that the PP had introduced. The same information was relayed to us at the OPP bargaining forum at which I represented the provincial officers. Now, given the statement, that particular statement, what has been done within the organization to deal with those environmental climate issues, if I can refer to it like that?
One of the issues that was done, it was the introduction of this wellness program, so that any employee who experiences that is a wellness issue, then she can refer it to the service provider or to the supervisor. That was one of the interventions that were done by the institution.
You say the employee wellness program. Would you mind telling the committee what that consists of? What type of intervention specific was that?
Well, it's an external. Okay, can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you. Proceed.
Okay, it's an external service provider where employees can conduct that is on their own, if they experience any challenges at work, they can also be referred to by their supervisors. Any employee wellness related matter is addressed through that process.
In line with the same sentiment that I spoke of in terms of the environment in which you operate and that the execution of tasks and purpose of the organization or the department is taking place in, that is very important. I want to ask you in terms of that, would you agree that if people within an environment is under pressure and people are unhappy as stated in the affidavit here, that would have a material impact on the performance of the organization and the individual?
I agree with that fully.
And would you also agree that given the mandate of the Public Protector's Office, which deals with the constitutional mandate of protection of the vulnerable, and specifically if we relate it to your work environment, any individual that finds himself with as a worker, regardless of rank, that your environment is critical to you executing on that mandate?
Yes, I would agree with that.
Okay, so in light of that, I'm going to ask you a few questions related to Mr. Samuel, and then related to specifically what I've mentioned now. Can you explain what written directives were given to line managers with regard to Audi letters, and where can we find those?
I'm not sure if I understand the question. You say, can I explain the written directives that were given to managers regarding Audi letters?
I think to make it simpler, I'm going to try and find it. I think it's in the affidavit as well of Mr. Samuel, and it's maybe more practical to say it's in paragraph 100. It says she would also insist, and with respect, we're talking about the public protector, she would also insist that people who did not meet their deadlines be subject to disciplinary action. Executive managers had instructions to issue Audi letters asking the recipient why he or she should not be disciplined in respect of missed deadlines. And I'm asking the question within the context, of course, of what we what I said before we started in terms of environment.
Yes, that I would agree with that. As I stated in my that is my affidavit and evidence, that I was also instructed by the public protector to issue an Audi to a particular employee. So I would imagine that other managers were also given such instructions.
Now, my question to you, sir, in light of that, what was the impact on the employees once they receive Audi letters?
Well, the impact would obviously be negative because nobody wants to receive an Audi letter.
Then I'm quickly going to jump to Mr. Samuel, and I'm going to his affidavit. He said, there's two questions that I have to start with. It is, one, the sickness that we've heard by other witnesses as well, and today it was brought up again. Did you receive medical certificates for Mr. Samuel that indicated that his condition was not imagined, but that it actually was a real medical condition?
Yes, we did.
So there is no reason for this committee to disregard the illness of Mr. Samuel in terms of the testimony that he... Okay. Then in terms of, again, the environment and the constitutional mandate of the public protector, I want to ask you the following. Mr. Samuel wrote a letter to the Speaker of Parliament in January. He followed it up with a letter to the public protector in March. Then on the 20th of March, disciplinary action was instituted against them. My question to you, given all of that, circumstances or nuances, let's rather say, was all of those considered when the disciplinary action was started against Mr. Samuel? Meaning, did the organization, the management, the senior managers consider, this is the public protector's office, we are in protection of the Constitution, we are the importance of rights, basic rights, all of those things, was it taken into consideration given that Mr. Samuel has made a protected statement to the speaker and then followed it up to the public protector, and then a case that is 9 years old or 11 years old was brought up against him? Was any consideration taken by the executive or by the senior managers?
Well, no, I don't think so, because when the employer believes that an employee has transgressed the code of conduct, now you look at how do you deal with that. I don't think that there was consideration of the environment and all those other things. The focus was on that this employee has transgressed the code of conduct, and then that is the disciplinary action was solely based on that.
Even though it was 9 years ago, and even though it was under a different executive, and even though the circumstances was unknown to the current managers, as you testified before.
Yes, that's correct.
Okay, am I out of time?
Yeah, last point. Unfortunately, I work within a framework with passion.
I know, Chair. I know, and I appreciate your. I just want to ask, in light of the scathing court judgment, as referred to by the Assistant Public Protector earlier in the affidavit, I think that was read. Was any steps taken by the organization to improve the quality control?
Yes, that is being addressed on a regular basis. For example, one of the steps taken was that after a judgment has been issued by a court, that judgment is discussed with investigators to identify where the loopholes are, so that that is the next report can be of a better quality.
Thank you very much for your indulgence. Thank you, Chair, for your indulgence as well. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Honorable Sukas. I now recognize Honorable Gondwe.
Jaliboga, Chairperson. Dumela, Mr. Jelela. Can you hear me?
I can hear you, Honorable Gondwe. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, sir. I have a number of questions for you. My first question is, who from the Office of the Public Protector recommended that someone from the SSA sit on the panel that appointed Mr. Neshunji? Why would the appointment of Mr. Neshunji necessitate that a rep from the SSA sit on his appointment panel? Was Mr. Neshunji being seconded from the SSA to the Office of the Public Protector?
No, as far as I know, when Mr. Neshunji was appointed here, he was not working.
But you have not answered my question.
Repeat your question, please.
Why would the appointment of Mr. Neshunji necessitate that a rep from the SSA sit on his appointment panel? And who took the decision that someone from the SSA should sit on his appointment panel?
The decision was taken by PP. And as I indicated earlier, we do invite external expertise in that particular field sometimes when we conduct interviews.
Thank you. Other than the panel which oversaw the appointment of Mr. Neshunji, which other appointment panel within the Office of the Public Protector has had the SSA as a rep on that panel?
No, there's no other one, because the external person would be an expert in that particular field. So SSA was brought in because it was a security manager position. So if, for example, it's a CFO, we would get that is a CFO, a financial person from another institution.
Thank you. In your opinion or view, did the Office of the Public Protector maintain close relations or ties with this SSA?
Yes, the institution does have ties, because as I indicated, that is the CFO that was secretary was from the SSA. And obviously with the vetting and all that, we work with the SSA. So we do work, that is, with them. And as I say, that is even the second that is CFO was from the C, was from SSA. So there are clearly ties between us as an institution and the SSA.
Okay, when you say that you have close ties, or you know, you've maintained close relations with the SSA, what is the SSA? Is it your sister institution? Do you have an MOU with them? I want to understand the nature of the relationship. And I'm glad you pointed out that someone was seconded from the SSA to occupy the position that Mr. Kaposa previously occupied, that of CFO. And I want to understand who recommended that someone from the SSA be seconded to this position. To your knowledge, how many times have people from the SSA been seconded to the OPP?
No, that is the only one I know, the CFO.
Who recommended that someone from the SSA be seconded to that position of CFO?
I assume it's PP.
Right, thank you. In paragraph 29 of the affidavit, you indicate that both Mr. Mahlangu and the PP disclosed a conflict of interest in relation to the appointment of Mr. Amos Skosana. Do you recall the details of the conflict of interest disclosed by both the PP and Mr. Mahlangu in this regard?
No, it's not required that people should disclose the details. Just saying that just by indicating in the form that I know this person probably from a previous employer, or just indicating that you know this person. There are no details that are required on how do you know the person. That is not required.
And was there a representative of the SSA sitting in on that panel that appointed Mr. Amos Kosana, seeing as he replaced Mr. Neshunji as senior manager for security management?
Sure, I can't remember. I'm not sure. I don't think so, but I'm sorry, correction. I don't think there was an SSA representative.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Jalela. Mr. Jalela, do you have top secret security clearance?
Yes, I do.
When did you get it?
2017, I think.
All right, thank you. I know that you stated that you were not consulted about the charges that were brought against Mr. Kaposa. My question to you then becomes, why did you agree to be involved in the settlement agreement pertaining to Mr. Kaposa, even though you were not familiar with the charges leveled against him? Did you not ask yourself how Mr. Kaposa could be charged with the dereliction of his duties when he was prevented from carrying out these duties because he didn't have a top secret security clearance?
Well, if the CEO asked me to be part of that is of an Asia-related matter, I wouldn't refuse. So the fact that I was not part of drafting the charges, I did not think that it stops me from assisting when the CEO asked me to participate in the settlement agreement.
Please confirm what Mr. Nyembe's qualifications were. I believe he's late now, right? And what sort of advice he was rendering to the PP at the time that he was appointed as special advisor to the PP? Because we've heard before that he was a political advisor and you described him as a special advisor. So I want to understand what his qualifications were and what kind of special advice was he rendering to the PP at the time?
Well, he has a legal qualification. I think it's LLB. I'm not sure, but I know that's a legal qualification. But the type of advice was given to PP, I won't know. I just know that he was a special advisor.
Can you confirm, do you know if Mr. Nyembe had top secret security clearance?
No, I don't know.
Okay. Is it my last question, Chairperson? Okay.
The Chairperson will tell you when it's your last question.
All right.
He doesn't get invited into last questions.
Now, I want to speak a bit about the former DPP advocate, Kevin Malunga. So I want to understand whether it's your view that Advocate Mkhwebane amended Advocate Malunga's delegated powers from being focused on oversight to being focused on training because he did not have top secret security clearance. Is that your view?
Yes.
Has a top secret security clearance always been a requirement for the post of Deputy Public Protector?
I'm not aware. The post of the position of public protector is not recruited internally like other positions, so I wouldn't know what are the requirements for that position.
Right. Thank you. And then regarding the matter of Ms. Mosana, why were the CCMA proceedings defended despite your recommendation that the CCMA award be paid and the attorneys and the senior counsel and HR advising that the prospects of reviewing the award were poor? And who ultimately took the decision to defend the matter?
Well, I don't know why was the advice not taken and the ultimate decision to defend the matter was PP's decision.
All right. I'm done, Chairperson.
It will be your last one, Yuta.
Yes.
That's a very surprise. Thank you, Honorable Konde. I now recognize Honorable Lagude.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good afternoon, Mr. Chalela.
Good afternoon, Honorable Lagude.
Mr. Chalela, in paragraph 13, can you please explain or elaborate further what you mean about the undue pressure from managers and the working condition?
That is paragraph 13.
13, yes. You said employees in that, I'm not quoting it verbatim, but I'm saying you said employees were under undue pressure from managers and their working conditions was unacceptable. What do you mean by that? If you can elaborate further so that we can have a better understanding.
It would be, for example, deadlines that I... Let me make an example. With the project on the backlog, now I'm not part of that process, but I would ask the CEO after the meeting, how did the meeting go? And then she would say it did not go well. People have not met the deadlines. Then I would ask this. I remember asking the CEO, that is then what is the way forward? And then he said, no, the deadline, the then that is this particular deadline was given. But I said to the CEO, but you know that that deadline is unrealistic. You're not going to meet that, is the, that deadline. So in such issues where that is deadlines are given, that is which are not realistic, which put pressure that is to employees.
Okay, thank you very much, Mr. Chalelo. In your paragraph 22, you said you were part of the panelists and you were not allowed to participate in the scoring of members. What were the reasons for that?
No, it's not a question of not being allowed. In those interview panels, I'm the secretary, I'm not a scoring member. My role is the secretary and giving HR advice. I'm not a scoring member.
But in other organization, Mr. Chalela, if you are part of the panel, you are interviewing people and you are part of those who will be shortlisting, you're allowed to do everything, including scoring. So it means that institution is different from others. Then I'll pass from that. Then in paragraph 7 of your affidavit, you provide information about cost containment measures that were implemented by then CEO, Mr. Mahlangu. Was this only applied to operational matters exclusive of litigation undertaken by the PP?
No, it included litigation. As I indicated earlier, that there was a decision that was taken that we should not oppose every matter that was brought to, that is, to court. That was one way of reducing legal, that is, costs.
In paragraph 10, you indicate that a decision was taken not to oppose review proceedings, considering the escalating legal costs. When was this decision taken?
I can't remember when was it exactly taken, because in our management meetings, legal services, like all other units, they present their report, and finance also present their report. And then when we discuss the reports, then we, for example, we identify that there's likely to be over expenditure on particular areas, then we take those decisions. So it's decisions that are taken, that is, in every meeting. So I would not know which particular meeting and when was that decision taken.
Okay, Mr. Chalele, considering the extent to which the legal cost of the PPSA has escalated over time, do you think this decision was adhered to by the PP?
Well, we did, that is, implement that this decision of not opposing every matter, but there were matters that were defended or opposed. So the legal expenditure continued to that is to rise.
Mr. Chalele, does the PP have a final say on which matters to oppose and which not to?
Yes, because a submission will come from legal services advising whether the matter should be paused or not, and that submission will ultimately go to PP for a final decision.
Okay. Have the review proceedings that the PP opposed in any way served to protect the mandate of the institution, or was simply opposing matters because she was not happy with the outcome?
Well, I wouldn't know that. I don't have an answer for that.
We didn't hear that. Please repeat. You were fading.
I'm saying I wouldn't know that. I don't have an answer for that.
Okay. Regarding the PP denying in your paragraph 21, denying employees their annual leave resulting in the PPSA paying out the employees. Do you agree that the decision of the PP led to the institution and incurring unnecessary expenditure in this regard, considering the limited resources of the institution?
I would agree that it would result to that, but that has not been implemented. The acting PP has decided against that.
Could this have been, okay, let me leave it because you say it wasn't implemented. Mr. Chelele, my last question. Do you believe that some of the labor dispute cost incurred by the OPP were unnecessarily wasteful for an institution that has limited resources?
There are some that I believe that they should not have been taken forward.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Zagude. I recognize Honorable Kijimani Skosane.
No, thank you very much, Chair, and good afternoon to everyone. Good afternoon, Mr. Chelela.
Good afternoon, Honorable Skosane.
Yes. In paragraph 91.8 of your affidavit, you indicated that the Commission for Gender Equality only did a desktop search in relation to the allegations of Mr. Ndou. So would you say they failed to interview people relevant to the case?
Yeah, it's difficult to say they failed, because if they felt that they could make a decision by just looking at the information that was given to them, they could be able to make a decision. I wouldn't necessarily say they failed. Probably they were satisfied that the information that was before them would enable them to make a decision.
Okay. My next question, in reference to paragraph 72 and 75, don't you think that the legal and labor dispute costs could have been avoided in relation to the dispute brought by Ms. Musana?
Okay, I did not get the question.
Paragraph, in reference to paragraph 72 and 75.
Yes.
Do you get it?
Yes.
Yeah, so my question is, don't you think that the legal and labor dispute costs could have been avoided in relation to the dispute brought by Ms. Musana?
Yes, that was our view, that this matter should not be opposed. So, but as it was indicated earlier, an advice is an advice. So the CEO of PP does not have to. That is to take it.
Okay. Yeah, my next question. It's in relation to an instruction that was given by Mr. Mahlangu in relation to the continuation of the disciplinary proceedings in relation to the case of Mr. Matlawe. I think there's some way you indicate that Mr. Mahlangu gave an instruction that the disciplinary proceedings should go on despite the fact that Mr. Matlawe had resigned. So what was your advice as the HR department in that regard?
Our advice was that we should let it go because, I mean, it's a waste. Firstly, clearly it was not going to be completed. So it was a waste of time and resources to continue with something that we know that we're not going to complete. Mr. Matlawe was already serving a notice.
So did you make that advice in writing?
No, it was a discussion in his office.
Okay. My last question, in relation to Mr. Kaposa, was Mr. Kaposa's appointment as the CFO also subject to the same conditions as those of Mr. Matlangu, due to the fact that he also didn't have a top security clearance?
I am not sure. When Mr. Kaposa joined the institution, I was not here. I was not yet that is here. I found him here.
Okay. So Mr. Kaposa was charged with dereliction of duty, according to paragraph 42 of your affidavit.
That's correct.
And then I think in paragraph 46, where you are saying Mr. Kaposa would not be able to obtain such clearance, referring to top security clearance, as he was a naturalized South African and had not lived in South Africa for the requisite number of years, but he could also not be dismissed because of the security clearance issue, given that the post had not been advertised with top security clearance being a requirement. So which duties and or responsibilities were then given to Mr. Kaposa, since he could not perform his duties as the CFO because of the issue of the top security clearance?
No, he was not given any duties. That is why there was an agreement that there should be a separation. I mean, there should be a separation agreement.
Okay. So basically, he was not doing anything in the institution.
If my memory serves me well, he was on suspension during that period.
And then the charge of dereliction of duties, what does it entail?
Well, I don't remember that is the details of those particular charges, but normally it relates to where you are expected to perform certain responsibilities and you fail to perform them. That is a general, that is understanding of the dereliction of duties.
Okay. No, thank you very much, Chair. Mr. Ichelela, thanks, Chair.
Thank you. Honorable Skosana, before I proceed to the next member, I see the hand of Advocate Mpofu.
Sorry, Chairperson?
I see your hand, yes.
My hand? No, it's fine, Chairperson. I wanted at that point to find out whether all these HR thing, whether this matter or that matter should have been opposed, what it has to do with the motion.
Thank you, Advocate Mpofu. You can't ask the member now when they're asking questions.
I'm not asking any member. Okay. I'm asking you. I'm raising it with you.
Okay. Now, if you ask, yes. Thank you. If you ask me, you did place on record your discomfort of irrelevance on the witness in the morning, and the evidence leader would have done her work. You also went through your critical questions, and I would have made a ruling to say we're going to be allowing the date. Yes, and then assess. So unfortunately, I don't have a new answer now to your question. If you thank you. You're muted.
Oh, sorry. No, I was saying you should have a new answer because it's a new question, but that's fine.
Thank you, Advocate. Don't go back to the briefcase.
There was.
I now recognize Honorable Mylam.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good afternoon, Mr. Chilela. I want to pick up on something that you mentioned with regard to Mr. Kaposa. In your affidavit at paragraph 48, you note that you suggested that the appointment of a new CFO be delayed until the settlement with Mr. Kaposa had been recouped. Did that occur?
Yes, it did occur, because the person that was seconded here was seconded for more or less a year. I'm not exactly sure about the period, but he was here for quite some time.
Okay, now that person that was seconded to fill Mr. Kaposa's position as acting CFO from the State Security Agency, who paid that person's salary?
That is my understanding. I'm subject to correction.
What is your understanding?
My understanding is that we were not incurring any cost that it was that person.
Okay. Turning to a slightly different matter, you responded to the Honorable Gondwe by saying that you personally have a top secret security clearance. Have you ever handled any classified documentation?
Yeah, you will have to define classified documentation. I don't know what that is.
You don't know what that is?
No.
So you don't know if you've handled classified documentation or not?
No, I don't.
Okay. Can I ask you, why would a chief financial officer require a top secret security clearance?
I don't know. What I know is that senior managers are required to have a top secret. So I don't know why, what would be the specific. As I say, I don't know what classified that is information is.
Okay. Would you agree that there has been an increase in the securitization of the Office of the Public Protector since Advocate Mkwebane's appointment?
Yes, I would agree.
Would you agree that the influence of the State Security Agency has increased at the Office of the Public Protector since her appointment?
Yes, as I say, for example, the secondment of the official here, that could be seen as increasing the influence of SSA to the institution.
Okay, I want to draw your attention. Let's talk about garden leave for a moment. Is that not just a suspension by another name?
That could be so, yes. Because, I mean, you are not at work, you are suspended, but it's, as you say, it's another name.
Okay, so if so, should it not follow proper human resources and disciplinary processes?
That's correct. That is why we're opposing garden leave, because our policies don't provide for that.
Okay. At paragraphs 107 to 109 of your affidavit, you refer to the sanction imposed on Ms. Mokgaladi and Ms. Sekele. And at paragraph 109, you say that the public protector elected not to implement the sanction imposed by the disciplinary process, but rather to dismiss these employees. Now, I want your opinion as a human resources practitioner. Is the action that was taken by the public protector in electing to dismiss those employees, in other words, to change the sanction completely, is that legally defensible?
No, it's not. That is why our advice was to PP was that if she is not happy with the sanction of the chairperson of disciplinary hearing, the request that the institution could take was reviewing. That is the sanction, because our disciplinary court did not provide for the executive authority changing the sanction of the chairperson.
Okay, so then at paragraph 65, you point to the public protector's behavior in dismissing Ms. Mosana without any process. So was it common practice for Advocate Mkhwebane to overrule HR in disciplinary processes?
No, it was the first time that it happened. That is why
But you've just said that it happened again with Ms. Mokhaladi and Ms. Sekele.
No, I'm saying that one was the first one.
This was the first one. So what I'm asking is, did this become a common practice?
Yeah, yes, as I indicated earlier, we advise. Now it's up to the PP to take the advice or not to take the advice.
Mr. Chilela, was there a culture of fear at the Office of the Public Protector? Were the staff scared of being dismissed or of receiving an Audi letter or of disciplinary processes?
Yes.
Okay. Mr. Chilela, on a completely separate issue, do you vet people in senior positions before their appointment? Do you check their social media, their Twitter, their Facebook, et cetera? Do you check those social media platforms?
Yes, we do. We do. We have a service provider that does that for us.
Okay. I'm going to read you a statement and I'm going to ask you if, and Chair, I'm not trying to ambush anyone. I really am not, but this is a statement on social media, so it's in the public domain, if that's okay with you. Can I go ahead?
We don't have it.
Yeah.
All right, Chair.
We don't have it, so it will be unfair.
Okay. All right. I'll leave that then, Chair. Mr. Chilela, my last question to you. Would you agree that the public protector is meant to be impartial and therefore that any suggestion of the role of political advisor raises questions over that impartiality?
Yes, the PP, I mean, the legislation requires the PP to be impartial. That is correct. That on the issue of advice, I really don't know what a special advisor advises to people. So it's difficult for me to respond to that question.
Sorry, my question wasn't about a particular person. It was whether a political advisor raises questions of that impartiality or of her partiality in that case. So I'm not talking about the special advisor. I'm asking if she has a political advisor, does that raise questions about her impartiality?
I suppose it would.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Mylam. I now recognize Honorable Siwela. Honorable Siwela, your hand is up. Honorable Siwela, your hand is up. It would not be recognized. Thank you. I now recognize Honorable Ola Ngola.
Thank you very much, Chair. Just few issues from me. And good afternoon, Mr. Chilela.
Good afternoon, Honorable Ngola.
In paragraph 25, part of the sentence that you deposed there is that you were not in favor of the decision to place Mr. Nechunzi to the garden leave. What were your reasons not to be in support of that decision?
because our policies don't provide for such a leave.
Thank you. That was short and brief. On from paragraph 60 to paragraph 87, you detail the event of what happened between yourself, the public protector, and the former spokesperson. And in the tone you are using there, you are equally saying you have actually tried to convince the public protector not to proceed with the fact that the former spokesperson must go home and finish her notice at home.
That's correct.
Is it your conviction that that which happened that day, which is detailed from paragraph 60 to paragraph 67, constitute unfair dismissal or constructive dismissal or unfair labor practice?
That is correct. That is why I had to intervene and stopped it from happening.
Okay. Do you think that your advice having been ignored has amounted to public funds being used in a process that could have been prevented?
Well, that advice was not ignored. I asked my protector that he must let us deal with the matter. So she let us dealt with the matter. So the advice was, that particular advice was not ignored.
Chair, Advocate Mbofu is accusing us of our booty. Tina, as if you know about you. Now, let's continue like this, Mr. Jelen. I understand it to be a workplace culture that we call each other throughout the positions we hold in that particular organizational institution. For example, in the case of a local municipality, a mayor is a mayor, speaker the speaker. In a space of the MEC is the MEC, the minister is the minister, the public protector is the public protector. Now, in an event, I call my senior by their ID name. Does it then constitute a dismissible offense?
I guess you're asking for my view on this particular one.
Yes, you can bring your view if fair.
It would depend on the context. For example, we call public protector PP in the office. So I wouldn't know that is the context, that is where Ms. Mosana called her by her first name. So the context here is important, which I don't know what was the context. So it's difficult to respond that is to that question.
Have you ever worked in a corporate services or human resources environment before?
Yes, I have.
Now, in your affidavit, it looks like between the end of 2017 and to 2019, there's been a lot of movement of the labor force, be it through audits, be it through suspensions, be it through dismissals, be it through demotions, be it through investigations against them, be it through their work laptops being confiscated and all that. In your experience in this corporate services or human resources field, has this kind of exodus ever happened, or have you ever experienced this kind of a busy traffic in the corporate services or human resources?
No. I must say that it was quite new and unusual.
Okay. The last issue, Chair, which I think I'm just raising for the benefit of the committee, is that Mr. Jelele is correct. The Deputy Public Protector is recruited by Parliament and appointed by Parliament. And Parliament does take them to the State Security Agency for clearance before any, if I may just make an example, having been part of the panel that that was doing interviews and the process towards the appointment of the incumbent Deputy Public Protector, what we did, we did not take everyone who applied to the clearance process because it would have taken much longer. So we have taken only those whom were shortlisted for them to get that clearance. So I want to assist even Honorable Gondwe on the question she was trying to pose. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Xola Ngqola. I now recognize Honorable Boyce Maneli. You did not raise your hand. We are vulgar.
Chair, that is unparliamentary.
Order, you are not recognized. He's being provoked. Honorable Boyce Maneli.
Thank you, Chair. Greetings to honorable members, public protector and legal representatives, evidence leaders, and greetings to our witness, Mr. Kelela. Greetings to you.
Good afternoon, honorable Manel.
Chair, I'll just start first before I get to my main question. Just clear a few questions for my understanding again. This point on 10 in your affidavit, Mr. Jelela, I'm not sure if you can at least remember and share with the committee the part that relates to what was said to be mandate as you look at reviews, in a way that says whether this was a guide that anybody would be able to follow, even if you were not in the institution, that you can be indicted in that whenever you look at whether labor or other litigation, that this is the guide that you have and comply to in taking or exercising a discretion to review or not to.
Okay, what I remember was that the institution will review only matters that challenge its mandate.
If I may repeat, Chair, to you, I'm actually asking the mandate. So whether this has been clarified that here is the guide, if there's a matter to be reviewed, this is what it would mean when you say challenging the mandate, because if that is not done in exercising discretion, I can take any matter on review on the basis that there's no guide, especially if I just join the institution later. So the point I'm asking, was this just verbal or is this something that is there guided, which guides everybody and therefore you can test everybody on it? I think that's the simplest of the question, Chair.
Okay, I'm not aware of the existence of any guide to that effect.
Will it then be correct through your Chair to then say the reliance would have been more on the discretion of the PP as the last person to make such decisions?
That would be correct.
As I said, Chair, I'm just clear up in those questions that I needed clarity on. If we can get back to 46, this paragraph 46 on your affidavit.
Slow tempo, please. paragraph 46.
I think the point to raise there again is that if you say, for example, the top security clearance matter was not in the advert itself, which the CFO candidates would respond to, does this mean it was a lapse on your side to enforce a policy that exists? Or as part of the norm, there would have been positions even other than this one that may have not been subjected to this top security clearance issue. So we'll understand we're raising the matter because there is a witness that appeared before the committee which raised a similar matter that it would have not been an issue before until the 2017 regime coming up.
No, that is not correct. I mean, the clearance certificates were here before the PP, the current PP joint institution.
So it did not say then?
It did not start in 2017.
Okay, so you'll then say that for all other positions, that would have been the case, but this one will probably be the lapse on your side to implement your own policy.
Not necessarily. The clearance certificate is not a prerequisite for appointment. Now, employees are appointed subject to that they get appointed, they start working, but they go through the process. Otherwise, it would be impossible to make appointments if we make this a prerequisite, because the state security which does this takes 2 or 3 years to issue a clearance certificate. So it would not work. It would be impractical to make it a prerequisite that you must have this certificate first before you start that is working. So it's not a prerequisite. But that is when you are employed, you start the process .
Thank you, Chair. If I may just clarify again, Honorable Skosana, I just want to check with regard to GT14. I think the point you are making there is that this is a confirmation that the CEO, then Mr. Mahlangu, would have known and been. Had been informed of the resignation and therefore still pursued this matter with this information, and your reference is that G14, where he also makes comments.
That is correct.
Would you then say that any other witness, it can be Mr. Mahlangu, anybody, who then says that I proceeded because I was not aware, would not only be unfair to the human resource and this committee, but would have been misleading Parliament?
Yes, that would have been incorrect because he was aware, as that submission shows.
Thank you, Chair. Then let me get to my main question so that I complete. On paragraph 21, which is regarding the appointment of Mr. Nishunzi. And you probably were in the panel at the time, as you say. At that time, did Mr. Nishunzi qualify and was the best candidate for the job?
Okay, there are two processes that are involved with the appointment of senior managers. One is interview process, and then the other one is competence assessment. So as far as the interview process, Mr. Neshwenzo was not that is the best candidate, but then when we consider both the processes, then he came up on top.
And then I think then the question then that arises would be a few months down the line or the period then he is removed. Is this the norm that you'd have, that advertise people respond to an advert, then down the line their skills may not be what is required and therefore send them elsewhere and get a new person in? Or it is just a matter that happened in this case? Thank you.
Well, it does happen, but I wouldn't say it's a norm. It does not happen that regularly.
Okay. If I may ask then, Chair, the Mr. Skhosana, which I'll also come back to with regard to conflict of interest declared. The Mr. Skhosana, in your recollection, was he part of those that applied at the time Mr. Neshunzi applied and would have been shortlisted, interviewed in the same way, him being the internal candidate? In your recollection, was he part of those who responded to this?
Okay, Mr. Skhosana was appointed from outside. He was not an internal candidate, so I'm not sure that if I understand the question.
What I'm asking is, in the interviews that you had for Mr. Neshunzi, would Mr. Skhosana been one of those that would have applied at the time and interviewed? So as I said, I'll just come back to the issue about the declaration of conflict of interest.
Well, I'm not sure if he applied, but what I'm sure of, if he applied, he was not shortlisted because he was not part of the candidates that were interviewed.
Okay, if I may then confirm again the part about the conflict of interest. At least you've clarified the part about SSA that they were not part on this one. The part about the interest, just repeat that point. Is it really just limited on knowing the person, or at least there will be some detail that is known on how you know the person? And I'm sure you'll understand the question may be whether there may be questions of relations, whether personal or other interests involved. So I just want to check again whether you were really saying in this case you don't get to be interested in that as long as you said I'm conflicted but I can make a decision at the end.
Yes, our process does not require details. You must just indicate whether you know the person or you are related to a person. It does not require the member of the panel to give details of the knowledge of the person or the relationship.
Chair, no, thank you, Chair. I will disappoint you. It was the last question. Thank you. And thank you, Mr. Chair.
He got sufficiently intimidated. That's very good. Wow. I now recognize Honorable Bekizwe Ngozi.
No, thanks, Chairperson. good afternoon, everybody. Good afternoon, Mr. Chelele.
Good afternoon, Honorable Ngozi.
Mr. Chelele, I want to take you to the paragraphs on your affidavit dealing with Mr. Mashangu from 49, at least up to 59. I'm not reading those paragraphs. You were involved several times in renewing his contract on 3 months and whatever period on the instruction of the PP. Am I right?
That's correct, yes.
Did you at every point ask if he had cleared his encumbrance that comes from his previous employer and the lack of the top secret requirements?
When PP initially asked me to make an offer to Mr. Mahlangu, I reminded her of the two outstanding issues that have not been resolved. And then that is where then that is the obtaining a top clearance certificate and the matter that was in the labor court.
What was the response?
No, the response was that it will be a short-term contract, hoping that we'll get that is this, this will be sorted out soon.
Paragraph 57, you say that the top secret clearance would not be provided unless the labor court proceedings had been completed by the SSA. Mr. Matlangu's evidence is that he was not denied secret clearance. His evidence is that it was pending. What is your view?
Well, it depends on the interpretation of the letter, because the letter was saying the SSA is not in a position to issue a clearance certificate until the labor court matter has been resolved. So whether you one calls it pending or that is denied, it's a matter of interpretation.
So this issue was a concern to you, Anger?
It was a concern. That is why in all the employment contracts, we made it a condition.
In paragraph 58 and 59, then you are visited, you attend a meeting with the PP, Advocate Nyembe, Advocate Kakane Senior, and one unidentified person. Thereafter, you are requested to, on December 19, to receive a call, and you are asked to wait to draft a response for the PP. And boom, there is a letter of resignation from Mr. Mahlangu.
That's correct.
What happened in that meeting?
In that meeting, I was asked to explain the appointment of Mr. Mahlangu. Then I explained that he was a preferred candidate, but there were these two matters that the panel was concerned about. So the decision of the panel was that though he is recommended, but that is these two matters must be, so he can't be appointed until these two matters are sorted out.
What was the interest of these three people that were in that meeting? What connection do they have with the PPSA?
I don't know any connection. Mr. Nyembe was the PP's, was the chief of staff, I think, by that time. I don't know Advocate Skakane, what was his connection with PP.
Will I be correct to conclude that him resigning is as a result of your explanation in that meeting? Will I be correct? Because that follows from your paragraph. Yeah?
I don't know. As I say, I just gave the explanation, then I was excused from the meeting. So I don't know what were the discussions after I've left the meeting.
But what are you saying in paragraph 59? Aren't you saying that in December you then received a call from PP saying that you're going to receive a letter and that you had to draft a response for her? What is the connection between paragraph 58 and 59?
Well, as far as I know, there's no connection. I don't know if it was connected. I wouldn't say that. It's possible it was connected, but I cannot say that because I don't know.
Mr. Mahlangu told the committee that he resigned because he was going to pursue greener pastures, and that meant to be a non-executive director in a trust or a NPO. do you think that he left the PPSA because of this encumbrance of lack of top secret clearance and the pending, the decision by his previous employer to fire him for corruption and misconduct?
Yeah, I don't want to make assumptions. I don't know.
Okay. Since Mr. Matangu came into the PPSA from around May 2018 to when he left in 2020 or 2019, there's been a lot of disciplinary cases that were proffered against employees at senior level and even at junior level. Do you think that his coming into the PPSA introduced this culture of taking people through disciplinary processes, and on whose behest was he doing that?
Yes, certainly there were most of the disciplinaries that are in my affidavit, for example, happened during his tenure as the CEO of the institution.
At whose behest was he doing this?
I wouldn't know that.
You wouldn't know. Okay, thanks. You referred us to a number of policies of the organization in paragraph, I think in B, paragraph 5. Now, in respect of, in particular, two people, in respect of Ms. Cleopatra, the spokesperson, when the PP said to you that she doesn't want to work with this person anymore, which of these policies would she have had to follow with you, or which would you have advised her to follow to lodge a grievance, and why didn't that happen?
Okay, I don't get that. You say which policy I would advise people to follow, and then you said to lodge a grievance. So I'm saying
she comes to you, she says she doesn't want to work with this person anymore. And if I were you, what I would do, I would say, ma'am, I understand what you are saying, but in these organizations, we follow procedure. If you have got an issue, raise it in terms of this one of these policies that you have listed up to 18. Did you do that?
In fact, that is what I said. That is what I said when she said that is Umis Mosana must go and serve notice. I said she could not do that because if you say to somebody he must go and serve notice, you are dismissing the person. So I said she could not do that. There are processes that must be followed when somebody is dismissed.
We know that she didn't follow that. Did you ask her to regularize it thereafter?
No, we asked her to leave the matter to us. She must no longer deal with it. We will deal with it according to our policies.
So you showed her the responsibility on her behalf. Okay, fine, thanks. In respect of Mr. Makhwala, or I think, okay, let me just say, in respect of Mr. Matlawe, I think I'm latching on to the point that is made by Honorable Manele. In paragraph 28 of his affidavit, Mr. Mashangu says that he did not charge Mr. Matlawe for raising an issue in the staff meeting, but he later on says that he also did not institute disciplinary processes against him. He understands that he left, but in your affidavit, you say that he indeed instituted disciplinary processes in your paragraph 101.
Yes, there were disciplinary processes. Yes, there were disciplinary processes against Mr. Matlawe.
Yeah, Chair, I think directly so, my submission is that Mr. Matlawe misled the committee. And that must be verified with him, between him and Mr. Kelele. Mr. Jalel, as I conclude, Chairperson.
That's your last point.
Oh, yeah. Mr. Jalel, as I conclude, I think all over here we see that the SSA is involved in the PP quite extensively. They advise, they second, in other words, they deploy into senior management positions, particularly very serious positions. They do the vetting for you. We learned from other witnesses that Fraser was there. Will I be correct to say that you were, in brackets, a branch of the SSA since the PP arrived? Thank you.
Okay, SSA was involved in certain instances. So I'm not sure about being a branch, being their branch.
Okay, thank you. Honorable Zed Luzipo.
Thank you, Chair. I nearly said good evening to honorable members and the team PP. I must apologize, Chair. I think I'll be doing a disservice for hijacking you. That's one point that is worrying me. And good evening, Mr. Jalel. I want to start from the last point that Honorable Gosi raised, because I think we said we are on uncharted waters. And some of these things must be a lesson, particularly as far as how our public service is concerned. Mr. Jalel, can I assume or endorse you as someone who, by where you are located, is someone who is understood to understand to the best of that institution how labor relations and human resource matters are supposed to unfold?
Yes, I would believe so.
Okay. I won't read this part, but I want to start to 64. And on 64, I want to start on the second question. It says present was both Ms. Mosana and then Chief of Staff Linda Moleleva. The PP came in. She was upset and indicated that she no longer wanted to work with Mr. Mosana, and she did not want to be doing her work, and that Ms. Mosana was disrespecting her by calling her by her first name, Busisiwe. Now, what do you call that incident?
I'm not sure if I understand the question. Well, it was a meeting where PP raised, that is, her unhappiness about the chief of staff. I'm sorry about the spokesperson.
No, I'm trying to read, because from when you read below, definitely, as a public servant, one, we don't want to assume. I don't get something here that says you were then instructed. If there was something, but there is a process after the incident of what it had happened. That's why I'm asking, what do you call what happened on that day in terms of Public Service Code of Conduct?
I'm not sure if I understand the question. On that day, as I indicated in my affidavit, PP, that is, said those that the issue was that she was unhappy, and then she said Cleo must go home to serve notice. That is where then I intervened.
No, but I can't find something that says she was unhappy. You said she was upset. and indicated, let's use the words that I use, and indicated that she no longer wanted to work with Ms. Mosana. That's what you said.
That's correct, yes. Well, upset and angry to me would mean the same thing.
Okay, let me lead you. In terms of the rules of fairness and equity and proper public service conduct, and as a senior official in the public service, what should you have done? Or will I be wrong to say that if it was an instruction or you understood to be an instruction, you should have requested the public protector to put it in writing? As an, according to you, if it was an instruction, wasn't it an irregular instruction? And if you believe it was an irregular instruction, does public service not instruct you to request your superior to put that in writing?
That could be one way of doing it, but we felt that we could, that is, correct it by taking over from the PP and deal with the matter.
No, so you don't take it as if it was an instruction.
Yeah, you could say it was an instruction because she actually said she must go, but we indicated that she cannot do that.
As a senior public service practitioner, the rules, you know, don't they say, if that instruction, according to what you say, because one will argue and say, you then facilitated an irregular instruction that had led to someone losing a job.
Well, my understanding is that we were correcting what PP wanted to do, which was incorrect.
No. I the point here is that you are a public service practitioner in human resource practice. It's not the public protector, it's you. I'm asking, didn't you believe that the instruction was irregular and you facilitated when you facilitated it, you then, that's the action you take, is then to agree on demotion. The rules again are straightforward. On what grounds? There are only two grounds you can take a person, is on misconduct, gross misconduct, or incapacity, as far as I know. Which one of the, on which rules of, or which human resource rules, the procedure you followed, as a person I treat, is highly an expert?
Well, in terms of what PP was saying, if PP was not happy with the work of Ms. Mosana, that would, if Ms. Mosana was not delivering on what was expected of her, that would fall under misconduct.
Yeah,
the last point.
Yes, my last point is just simple. Is there any evidence you can present that you have requested a written instruction on what you believe is an irregular instruction? Because even on Mr. Mahlangu, I can't find anything. It's what was said to you, not what, as this committee can be an evidence to be used that you acted according to what is expected of a person of yourself on the office that you occupy. That's my last point, Chair.
Well, I did not tell the committee that I requested for a written instruction. So there would be no evidence to that because I did not request for that.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chelela, and thank you, Honorable Lizipo. Honorable Mankeng Setlape.
Thanks, Chairperson. Good evening to you, Chair, Honorable Members, the PP and her team.
Good afternoon, Honorable Tlape.
Ntate Tshelela, I take that a spokesperson in the form of Mayor Mosana is a well-known person. Given a chance, how will you rate her performance then?
Well, he was not working with me. I wouldn't know.
Okay. Now, you have indicated that on the instruction or decision that she must go home and serve notice from home, you intervened. How did you resolve that one? How did you intervene?
I asked the PP that Ms. Mosana must be excused from the meeting. And then when she left the meeting, then I did inform PP that what she just did was incorrect. She cannot do it.
Eventually, what happened from your intervention on that one?
And then after the meeting, we met with Ms. Mosana, that is informing her that PP no longer wants to work with her, and then we will be looking at options.
Now, the options that you looked for, was it based on her performance?
No. It was based on the fact that PP did not want to work with her, so we had to... One of the options, for example, was to move her from the private office to somewhere else.
Okay. So where she was moved, did it put her in a worse off position or she was on the same level?
It was on the same level.
Okay. I'm asking this because on her resignation letter, Ms. Mosana alleges that on GT12, an extra GT12, that... she ultimately resigned because of intimidation and harassment. What is your take on that one?
Well, I don't know that is intimidation and harassment. From the HR side, how we handled it, that is, there was no intimidation and harassment. It could have been from somewhere else, but not from the HR side.
Now, Ndate Mosana, as a custodian of human resource management, according to your knowledge, would you say to what extent were the human resource management policies adhered to in the PPSA?
Generally, or in this particular instance?
Generally, because all these witnesses that has been coming here alleged that procedures or policies were not followed. Now, you are here today, the custodian probably of human resource management. To what extent did your human resource management policies be adhered to in PPSA?
We try to adhere to and advise, that is, other managers or people in the institution to adhere to them.
Thank you, Honorable Tlape. Mr. Tshelela. Just if I can get just three issues that you can assist me with to just help me understand better. Honorable Mylam, ask you a question. It's about the view that securitization of the office happened at the arrival
of the public protector, Advocate Busiwe Mkhwebane. And you answered that in the affirmative in the response. The first thing I want to know that you can assist this committee with, what are the features of a securitized institution?
Well, one example I can make is that we did not have a standalone security management unit. It was part of facilities and logistics. Then when PP came, it became a separate independent unit with a senior manager. There was no senior manager before in security. That is one example.
Is that all?
Well, that is the working with the SSA, for example, that is the secondment of officials from SSA. That could be one, that could be another example. Now the issue that was raised by one member about the vetting, my understanding is that vetting is done by SSA only. I may be wrong, but that is my understanding. So I would not regard that as securitization, because my understanding is that only SSA does vetting, that is for employees in public service.
So the example you'd have made, are you of the view that you want, therefore, this committee to believe that the public protector of South Africa under Advocate Busiwe Mkhwebane was securitized because of the example you're making?
Well, I would say the security function was elevated because it was not a separate unit before, and then after PP joined, then it became a separate unit with a senior manager. Whether that is securitization, I don't know, but it was definitely elevated.
You cannot know. You did say that it was securitized. I would not accept a no.
You answered in the affirmative,
and I'm only asking you to assist this committee so that we understand these features of this securitized institution.
That's correct, sir.
What is correct?
That it was securitized because of this example I've given.
Okay. If I then say that would not be my understanding of a securitized institution, because the example you have made would be essential in an institution that deals with critical information, what would you say?
Well, I would say people would have different interpretations of what securitization means. So I would agree that you would any other person would have his or her own different interpretation.
Okay. From the HR perspective, you being at that level, HR being a support service to other functions in that institution, was there a process for the appointment of consultants? Did you have a defined process for how consultants were appointed? Because that would have been an HR function.
Not consultants, most of the time, are appointed through the supply chain management process, not HR.
And so HR would not know that there's a service provider in this institution, even if it's done by supply chain management, would not know about that?
We would know.
So which one must I take?
No. What I was saying is that consultants are not appointed through an HR process. They are appointed through an SEM process. So HR would know that is in some instances because, for example, I would be a member of the BID specification committee or BID evaluation committee or BID adjudication committee. So I would know that is through those processes.
Okay. Again, as an HR person, were you aware that staff were complaining that they were going without sleep?
Yes, I was aware.
PPSA, were you aware?
Yes, I was aware.
Oh, what steps were taken?
One of them is the wellness one, the ICAS, that is one. Where that is staff were encouraged, that is if they experience that is challenges, they could that is consult ICAS, that is for assistance.
Okay. Maybe the last point. One of the things that this committee must check is to test the competency or incompetence of the incumbent, Advocate Mkhwebane. I just want to check from you, from an institution point of view, are there at least one or two things you would share with us as a homework for this committee that are in the institution which will render this public protector and future public protectors incompetent as a result of weaknesses in the institution. Can you share that with us? Or is the institution in perfect shape?
No, the institution is not in perfect shape.
Yes. So what is that one or two things that you think we must, after all what we're doing, that we must attend to?
Probably what I would say is that when Parliament appoints a public protector, I think one issue that probably the committee should focus on, the Parliament should focus on, is the management and leadership, that is competencies of that person.
So the issue would be the management abilities and competencies of the incumbent public protector and not the support functions of the institution.
Well, normally the tone is set from the top, so it's important that the leadership should be in a position to guide the institution and lead the institution. I think that is critical for me.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Kelela. We're almost there. Perhaps at this point, I'm going to ask Advocate Bauer in terms of Directive 616 and 617, if there's any question you want to pose to the witness.
I have two, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chilela, I wasn't sure if I understood your response in respect of Mr. Samuel being off ill all the time. And I just want to put, and so he couldn't be served with charges in the period prior to March 2020 from 2017. And I would just like to put on the screen, which is going to be the manager leave report reflecting his sick leave from the period March 2018, roughly for that year, up until March 2019. And we'll have to make it a bit bigger, I think. Can you just, yes. And the ones in highlight reflect essentially
this. I'm sorry, Advocate Bao. I just wanted to know if this document can be identified, please?
It's a management leave report for Mr. Samuel for the financial year March 2018 to March 2019, and it's at 1514 bundle F83.
1514F.
Document number 83.
Thank you so much. Thanks. Okay. Sorry, Chairperson.
Mr. Chelele, you're probably more familiar with his forms than what I am, but would you agree that it doesn't show Mr. Samuel to be off sick for lengthy periods of time in that financial year? Would you agree with that?
Yes, sir. Yeah, yes.
When you indicated that you endeavored to serve charges on Mr. Samuel and he knew about that, when precisely was that, Mr. Chelele?
Well, I don't know the exact, that is, period, when was that, but I know that there were attempts that were made to serve him, that is, the charges. I don't know the exact period.
Okay, we'll endeavor to put that before the committee once we've ascertained that, when you're able to ascertain that.
Yes.
Okay, and then in respect of Mr. Samuel, he was reporting to Mr. Ndoa at the time, correct?
That's correct.
Right. And are you aware that his payments of his traveling and accommodation to attend at criminal court was being paid for by the PPSA?
No, I'm not aware.
Okay. And if he did make a disclosure of his conviction to the PPSA, he would do so via his immediate line manager. Would you agree?
That's correct, yes.
So you might not know about it, but he could very well have made the disclosure.
Yes, I may not know about it because it would not necessarily be made to me.
Okay.
Chairperson?
I suppose Advocate Bao, Advocate Mbofu.
Yes, Chair. I wanted to ask, is it the version of the evidence leaders that Mr. Samuel did not know about the, or rather that PPSA knew about his conviction?
Yeah, I will hand over to Advocate Bauer.
I could say never ever am I going to tell you what the PPSA's version is on anything, Mr. Mpofu.
I'm asking with my tongue full in my cheek, as you might imagine. But yeah, I'd like an answer.
Now, can you say the question again?
From that question, I'm sorry, Chairperson. Yeah, from that question, I'm saying, is it the version of the evidence leaders that that Mr. Samuel disclosed his conviction to the PPSA?
Let me put it to you this way, Mr. Mpofu. I had a recollection that Mr. Samuel had said something to this effect in his evidence. I can't recall that offhand. So I've now, and I don't want to give evidence. Mr. Ndo's coming tomorrow. Did Mr. Ndo confirm whether Mr. Samuel had disclosed it to him or not? That's probably the best way to go.
Thank you, Advocate Mpofu. Conclude, Advocate Bauer.
Yes, thank you, that's it.
You're done?
Yeah.
Oh, thank you very much, Advocate Bauer. Mr. Gumbi Elela.
Chair.
We have now reached the end of our session. Do you have anything to say to the committee?
No, sir, I don't have anything else to say.
I didn't get that.
No, I did not have anything to say.
For your final comment?
No, I don't have any comment. Thank you. Just to thank you for the opportunity to come to the committee and
I can see you're just ready to go. Thank you very much, Mr. Gumbi Jelela, on behalf of the committee. I want to thank you for availing yourself before today and today, and your contributions in answering questions from the evidence leader, from Advocate Bauer and Advocate Dalimbofu, and as well as the members. Hopefully what you would have placed in this committee is going to be of assistance to the committee when it does its own deliberations and make a report. So you are now formally excused. That's where your day ends and the inquiry session with the committee. Thank you very much. Honorable members and colleagues, want to thank all of you. The meeting is now adjourned. See you tomorrow at 10.
Thank you, Chair.
Recording stopped.